There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
I'm an alien.
Perfect.
Absolutely perfect.
Welcome to Live Podcast on the Left. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Marcus Sparks. I am here with the Foley Master, Henry Zebrowski.
I mastered.
Guys, today's a special episode. We are talking to a very thin man.
A thin man?
Oh, very thin man.
Yeah, I guess he was.
He was kind of thin.
He's
not very thin.
He's
ghostly,
no.
I could say. I say ghostly, sure. But sure. I don't
you know
think...
what's how... So, like, it's not like he's thin. It's like he's thin for the world.
He looks like a man who's been abducted by aliens.
Absolutely. And we have the very astute Ed Larson.
Hello! How you doing?
And today on the show, we have an interview with... I would say one of the biggest names in ufology history.
Yes.
Like one of the, by far the most famous alien abductee to ever exist.
Besides Betty and Barney Hill.
Besides Betty and Barney Hill.
Travis Walton, too.
And Travis Walton. But well, I put them on the Mount Rushmore people that have been raped in space.
Yeah.
Yes, our interview today is with Whitley Strieber. But before we get to the interview, we got to talk about Contact in the Desert, where this interview was actually held.
We did this in what they called the Fishbowl. Is there, essentially, it's just like an outdoor cafe recording area. Last year was what we spoke with Dave Foley last year in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very funny conversation because it's like, obviously, very famous, funny man talking very seriously about aliens.
Dave Foley from, you know, Kids in the Hall, from News Radio.
He was amazing. So this one, we were like, let's try something different. So we had this opportunity, and partially, like, I know before all this, last year we went to Contact, but now that we know the people that run Contact much better, we pick...
And Contact in the Desert, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is a massive alien, I would
UFO.
Say paranormal.
Yeah,
not necessarily paranormal, but mostly, like, UFO-focused convention held out in the Coachella Valley.
End of May, every year. Go, if you like aliens even a little bit, this is the place for you to be.
Yeah, we had a ton of fans come out, a ton of people that were super cool out there. So thanks to everybody who said hello and came out to our shows at Contact in the Desert this year.
Yeah, we had a big comedy show, which we're going to release on YouTube soon, too.
Exactly, we will. But that's also, I want to point out, we're trying to lower the median age at Contact.
Please.
Yes.
So please come. If you are, I'm just saying that there's no fucking
I'm going to say
hate.
45 or younger.
Yeah, I would say literally, please, for the love of God, if you're 45 or younger, please come to Contact in the Desert. We need you.
Yeah, also, they need you.
Whitley needs you.
These guys are old.
Well, because
they're only going to be talking for so many more years.
Exactly, and this was my concept, right, is I wanted to do hot ones with Whitley Strieber.
Yeah.
So speaking of, they're very old. And so I was like, you know, we'll do all this, you know, maybe we'll do, like, we pitched at Whitley's people. They were like, oh my God, he couldn't think it's funnier, blah, blah, blah. We arrive that day, spread out, like, we're nervous.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I was very nervous.
Because I did not know what to expect from Whitley. I know that the man is very sincere. He's been through quite a bit.
I don't know what I believe, but if anything is true, I believe him.
Yes, I agree with that, and I truly believe that he believes, without a doubt. There's not an ounce, I do not detect an ounce of charlatan in this man.
Mm-hmm. No, and when we sat, and we were like, so we arrived, and we're like, okay, he comes in, you know, he's doing great, he's very friendly, congenial, and then we're like, okay, here's the hot sauces we're going to use. And it was like, what do you mean, hot sauces?
Yes.
And then we were like, oh, we were going to do this whole funny hot sauce-based bit. It's from a show called Hot Ones. And he's just like, is that about freshly made frankfurters? And it was just like, no, it's actually about it. No, it's a hot wing chicken challenge show.
And then we got worried that we were going to kill him.
Well, then he's backed into the bit. Then he's like, I'm fine with these hottest
sauces. I will have some of these warm sauces.
And we were like, he was game.
He was game. Yeah. But then he was like, but then we're like, oh no, though. Because we can't put, we can't do you.
You got a crazy one. You got like a Magnum or.
Well, I got the bomb.
Yeah.
I got
the famous one.
The super hot one. And he was like, because then he felt backed into the bit. And I want to say thank you so much, Whitley, for at least entertaining some of it.
I wouldn't say he felt backed into the bit. I would say that he is a man who is very game and very friendly. And he's like, okay, if I said I would do this, I don't remember saying I would do this, but if I said that I would do this, I'm going to do this thing.
And he did a good job of being like, no, you bastards. Like, I could definitely have seen a thing where he'd be like, you fools and jesters, each one of you should be destroyed by the Galactic Empire.
Well, I will say last year he refused to talk to us.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, Captain Ron, the guy who runs Contact in the Desert, I think he vouched for us.
He did,
because
yes.
I think last year was our sort of audition to see, like, all right, how can these guys handle it? Are they going to be, you know, are
animals.
They going to piss everyone off here? Yeah. Are they going to be a bunch of animals?
And we only pissed off the one man that apparently was also a problem to the bookers themselves.
Yes. We pissed off the man.
The right person to piss off.
Yes, yeah. We pissed off the man who sang a song about how lasers destroyed the World Trade Center, and then he got in trouble for setting his World Trade Center effigy on fire on stage in a convention center.
I think you're forgetting what denomination of people whose lasers they belong to.
Jewish lasers. Yes. I forgot about that. And
that key moment.
Yes. And then he got sick afterwards and he blamed us for making fun of him.
Yeah,
and
of course.
That all of our negative vibes made his cancer
and
come back.
And he kept crossing out Satan on our stickers.
Yes. And guess what?
Yeah.
We did get you sicker. We did it on purpose. But Whitley says a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
So this is a long form interview. And that's why, like, well, I just want to say this up top.
And some chewing at the end.
There is some chewing at the end. That's a misophonia alert for you people. But we don't do a lot of pushback on Whitley because we are legitimately in his space. We're at Contact.
It's not the last pod studio.
No. Right after we did this interview, someone, a well-meaning fringe member of our audience came up to me and said, man, I can't believe you let him off so easy on all that butt stuff. And I honestly, I appreciate the energy. I sort of understand. But the man obviously has been through quite a bit.
He has.
Yes. You know, and so that's why, just know, we're speaking with him and we're joking with him, but Whitley does have a very sincere view of what happened to him.
Yes. And that's what I would say, like, while you're listening to this, like, have an open mind, because that's what we went into this with. I went into this with an open mind.
I'm there to learn.
Yeah, I'm there to learn. I'm there to hear his perspective. And we are definitely in his space. We're in his house.
For sure.
But that's the reason why I didn't throw a fucking little jar of KY at him when he sat down on the fucking dais.
Yeah, because we wanted to be respectful. And the thing is about all of this alien stuff and all of this UFO stuff is that, you know, like, I am definitely like an agnostic, I guess. Like,
we all should be. I'm still a professional agnostic.
Yeah, when it comes to the UFO stuff, there's some stuff that, like, there's stuff that I've seen that is very compelling. There is stuff that makes me believe that there's definitely something happening out there. Whitley Strieber is one of the very few people in the UFO world that I will listen to when he speaks.
Yeah. Well, especially as an experiencer.
Yes, like an experiencer.
Yes, because a lot of times you have guys that have conjecture, people that are, because how many stripes of ufologists have I forced you to sort of
meet
now?
I've grown through a lot of it, and I like this man.
Right? Yeah. So it's like now, so there's something there. The man's extremely, extremely warm. That's what I was really happy about. He was friendly to us, even though he knows that we're a bunch of shithead, like, shitlords, essentially. Yeah. But he was very, very nice to us in that way.
Well, what I appreciate most about Whitley Strieber, as opposed to so many other people at Contact in the Desert, is that he is not afraid to say, I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems like every other fucking panel that I went to at Contact in the Desert, everyone was afraid to say, I don't know.
Of course.
Like, I actually actually went and saw Whitley on a panel that was about, I can't remember what it, like, I couldn't even tell you, like, it was about psychic something.
Yeah.
But, like, about, you know, contacting UFOs psychically, and all of these people, everyone else on stage was just kind of talking shit, and you could see Whitley Strieber just crossing his arms going...
Yeah, okay, all right.
But he was the only one who spoke that had anything I believed what he had to say, and I respected his opinions, because he was like, look, we don't know what this is. We don't know what's going on here, but there is something, and we need to try to figure it out. And everyone else,
especially to his experience and to him.
Yes. And everyone else is trying to shoehorn all this pseudoscience in there and trying to shoehorn their own personal experiences and what they, you know, and they're also trying to promo their books and their documentaries all at the same time.
Yeah.
Willie Strieber, class act.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
He is absolutely a class act.
Yeah, he didn't start screaming at him at me when I asked him to make the noise of the alien that was the thing that was the most frightening noise he ever heard.
No.
Spoiler alert.
I know. I was like, was it like this? Was it like this? Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Was it like this?
Man, the night after the interview, I saw him like at the valet with like three chicks, and yeah, he was just like, those wings weren't shit. You know, he was so much fun. I love that guy.
Also, just know at ufology conferences, they mop up.
Woo!
Yes.
I mean, there's something about those ladies who sell those crystals.
Dude, they are so some silverback cougars.
Yeah. Tell me about these. This silver. Why is it special?
I'll tell you. It happens to make old ladies wet.
Oh, go, slam. Squirt.
Fill that pool up somehow.
Yeah, this is great.
It's the desert.
We're just gonna love this.
Yeah. No, but it is from contacting the desert. I was surprised at how horny it was both years. You could feel the sexual energy in that room.
Oh, yeah. Amber, that one night when she left us to go out alone, I was like,
I was worried.
Ooh, she is going to come back with an alien goddamn husband.
No, yeah. We just had to tell her, it's like, steer clear of the shamans.
Yeah, anybody with the shaman whose real name is Greg, don't talk to him.
Anyone who's staying in an RV.
Yeah, they have to be able to afford a hotel room.
All right, well, without further ado, let's get into this interview. Like, this was really fun, and thank you so much to Whitley for both humoring us during this interview and for humoring this introduction.
Thank you, Whitley.
Thank you, Whitley.
Thank you, Mr. Strieber.
Please.
I'm better than you.
Yeah. You are.
You are.
Live from Northland.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. How are you today? Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, live at Contact in the Desert. My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Ed Larson.
Hello!
And Henry Zebrowski over there.
Guys, what a wonderful day to be a part of the Last Podcast family. It feels like this is a real full circle moment. This is somebody that we have been so interested in your works for all of these years, and I'm so glad that you're here today to talk with us, and I'm sorry for what we're like and who we are. But I just want to say it's an honor to be here with the author and, I would say, just thinker across the board, Whitley Strieber.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So good to have you here.
Thanks.
And we'll get to this.
Or not.
you're talking about the bevy of hot sauce in front of you.
I'm not going to make you do...
This is not serious. This is no big deal.
Yeah. He loves it. I saw him before. He would... The doctor actually dropped this off for him, the debunk.
So, Willie, my first question is that, you know, you've been in, you know, the UFO world for, you know, a while now. How has your understanding of the UFO phenomenon, like, evolved in the years since the publication of Communion?
A simple, short question.
Yeah, come on, go. I can answer it
in a few words. The evolution of it has been really fascinating, and it's been accelerating over the past few years. It has been... at first, we were, Ann and I and our family were, and friends were, ended up in a deep contact, profound and very physical, often personal contact situation that was absolutely different from everything that was happening elsewhere in the world. And I was ending up going out on television talking about this, and people were not friendly about it. They didn't like to hear it. It was a deep shock to people that suddenly somebody would be going out and saying that something that everyone, including me, did not think could happen was actually happening and was real. And the result of this was I became the butt of rectal probe jokes,
yeah,
big time.
And, no pun intended.
You know, and it was hard to deal with because I actually was raped. And, you know, it's if you can imagine anyone here having an experience like that and then having it turn into an international joke, it was wild. I just thought, you know, I thought, can I take this? And Annie would say, you signed on for it. You went out in the woods all by yourself in the middle of the night because you're crazy.
And I said, do you regret even coming out at all? Like, do you regret at all?
I don't regret it anymore. I sure as hell did when I was being torpedoed all the time, yes. I thought to myself, oh, God, I had such a cool novel in the works when this started. It was a novel about spies in Russia, and it would have been a big success. I never finished it because communion interrupted it. And I figured, well, I'll write this book for, you know, it'll take me maybe a year to write it. It'll go out. It's an interesting, strange story. And people, you know, it'll be interesting. And then I'll move on. I've never finished the book about Russian spies to this day because I've been doing this ever since. Because actually what happened was, they are here. And this is gradually, over time, becoming a bigger and bigger part of our world. Until finally, it is in the end, over the years, it is going to change mankind more profoundly than anything else ever has. That's how big it actually is. And most of you, many of you were in on it at the beginning. We are all at the beginning of it in terms of history, because 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now, this is going to be the time that is looked back on when mankind really started. And this is because we are starting to become a cosmic species, for better or for worse. And I'm still worried about those hot wings.
I mean, I think that if the Greys experience da bomb, they might wipe us out. And they might think that this is a weapon that destroys their very, very fibrous, very, very, you know, fragile insides.
Look, I will be frank with you. I have succeeded in pissing off the Greys a number of times.
Okay.
I talked about that in my lecture and showed a bit of what happens. I didn't tell a whole story. You don't want to do this. But, you know, my wife said to me years ago, she said, you really are possibly the most annoying person I've ever met.
And that's why she married you. It's called love.
I said, well, what does that mean? She says, Whitley, I signed on for an interesting life, and I've got that. So that's where we are. But you're still extremely annoying. I'll give you an example of that. I pulled a fast one on Anne. She was very smart, and she was not easily fooled. We went walking one afternoon in July, and we lived in Brooklyn Heights, right overlooking the harbor, New York Harbor. And there was this fireworks show going on. And so she said, what is this? She'd forgotten it was the 4th of July. So I said, oh, it's Wisconsin Cheese Week. And she says, she bought into it. She says, Wisconsin Cheese Week? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why would they spend all of that money and you can't even tell it's anything to do with Wisconsin cheese? And so, you know, we went on to other things, and I forgot about it. About a week later, we were at a friend's house. He was a writer also and wrote big, thick books, which will become important in a moment. And she says, and they were from Wisconsin, the writers. And so she's in the middle of dinner. She pipes up with, did you see that fireworks display last week? You know what that was for? Wisconsin Cheese Week, and their cheese is horrible. And they didn't even say anything about it. They just wasted all their money. And they look at her, and the run of it was Peter Straub, actually, the writer. He's passed on sadly enough, but he says, "And I think I saw the 4th of July fireworks." A second later, I look over at her. She's looking at me. And so, as I said, Peter wrote very thick books. She walks out of the dining room and walks into the back into the dining room with one of his books, doesn't say a word. Wham! She hits me over the head with the book and then goes and puts it back, and the conversation continues as if it never happened. I've often wondered whether the Straubs remember that or what it meant to them or anything. But that was the only time I ever pulled the wool successfully over Anne's eyes, and she never let me forget it. Believe me.
I haven't given a serious answer to my wife in our marriage.
And you're still married. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes. She will, if she makes it here tonight, she'll leave him.
Live from your grave.
Now, you've had how many points of contact?
Oh, I can't count them. But, you know, the interesting thing is people ask me, why you? And I think to myself, there's a whole lot of reasons for that. First, I was stupid enough to go out there and do this, not knowing what would happen. But also, I was a horror novelist, not like Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
So people could pick and choose what they wanted to believe of me. They didn't have to believe me. And that's very important to the visitors. They do not want to engage in cultural colonization, which means as soon as we realize they're real, we completely turn toward them and forget our own development. We're only interested in their stuff now. And that is actually not going to happen. Because what's going to happen is now, if they came today or tomorrow, a lot of us will completely turn toward them. But a core of us are going to see this in the context of our own lives and our own work in the sciences and so forth. And our culture is not going to end.
Can I ask, though, do you not think that we won't be so impressed by the shiny new world that the aliens bring, that it seems that humans so far really love all the like dings and dangles and stuff on top of culture.
We're creatures of novelty above all. Yeah.
And that we might become obsessed with it no matter what, that they might not even be able to control that about us, that we would end up like worshiping them then anyway and electing one to be president and putting them on Mass Singer and all that shit.
Well, they're not born in America. They can't be president.
You're right.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going around. I don't think anyone from another planet would want to be president. I don't think anyone from this planet would. No, I don't think so. People who want to be president are always suckers because they get in office, everyone loves them for 2 weeks, and then they're hated and go crazy for the next few years, and then they die. So
I just want the armies.
The what?
I want the armies, someone control the bombs, just because I think I could fix some stuff.
Oh, God. you know, I think if the one thing that could bring the visitors out would be if we started to go to a nuclear war, they might stop that. I'm not sure, and I don't want to test it, but I think that's possible because it's clear they have two messages, at least that I've heard and that other Close Encounter witnesses have heard, which are be careful of nuclear weapons and be careful of your planet's environment. There are too many of you here, and the planet is getting unstable. And those are two core human survival issues. Therefore, they want us to survive, or they wouldn't be telling us. They would tell us, oh, nuclear war doesn't matter. Go ahead and burn out the planet. Do anything you want to. You're fine. And actually be waiting for us to go extinct. But they clearly are not doing that. They're not in that space. They want us to survive.
Well, during all of the communications that you had and the contacts that you have you ever come across why? Like, why do they want us to survive? Why do they care?
Well, Miles, I've been really concentrating on that, especially in the last book, in The Fourth Mind. I think, and this is just me, that they see the world from outside of the stream of time. And therefore, I think it's really difficult for them to experience anything new. My wife was a master of this from the beginning. I often wonder, she was just like me, an ordinary kid from an ordinary American town, but she suddenly became a lot more when the communion experience came along. And she called the book Communion. She titled it because she said that's what it's about. And it's about more than contact. It's about the life experience I'm having now, which is getting to a point where they can share my life in a way. And I think it's because when they're really in close contact with us, in communion with us, they experience life as we do. And for all of us, everything, every instant is always new. We don't see ahead. And they want that back. I think that they got so knowledgeable, they must be very old, so knowledgeable that they ceased to be able to be surprised by anything. And we're like a resource. I've thought maybe we're even a kind of addiction to them, because when they're close to us and in communion with one of us, they're experiencing the new all over again.
God, imagine if they met Joe Exotic.
What?
Like Joe Exotic.
The Tiger
like,
King.
Like a truly Tiger King. Did you see Tiger King?
Unfortunately, no. But I'm just, afraid I don't watch much TV.
He's most novel.
Okay.
Yeah, I would put
I'm lost in this maze now. I have
he's
no idea
tiger
who Tiger
trainer
King.
Criminal that deported his own jail husband so that he can get a pardon from Trump so that he could go down and live with his husband in Mexico that he ratted out to ICE.
Listen, Henry, Mr. Strieber has dealt with enough in his life.
Okay. I deal with very strange beings from other worlds, not very strange beings from this one. And that is all I have to say about this.
It's interesting the way that like you talk about how, you know, extraterrestrials may perceive time. It sounds sort of like, you know, how Kurt Vonnegut talked about the Trophimagorians in Slaughterhouse-Five, like how, you know, humankind sees time as if we're on a train with a box over our head and a long pipe in front of us, and that's all we see. We can't break free, but
and they see it differently.
Yeah.
And they want the experience. I think they're here because they want the experience of the new. Also, they are, you know, you hear the military people saying it's a hive mind, or I guess a communal mind, but it's much more than that. Getting close to them, you get this impression that they are all one in a sense, mm-hmm. but that this immensely complex, vast, incredibly subtle mind is expressed in different ways through every one of them, but they're all linked. This means that they're not necessarily all that creative. It means that you get the impression when you're around their stuff that it's old, but beautiful, perfect, but old. And it's because they don't innovate either. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's only one mind. And another reason they're probably here is that this place is filled with more minds in this room than they have in their entire world, in their whole history. And these are big minds. Don't make no mistake. You've got a trillion synapses in your head. And in fact, just in the past few seconds, 50 or 60,000 of them have died forever. And you don't care because you've got so many. And they want relationship with that, but not with all of us so much, but with each of us. They want a relationship, a deep personal relationship with as many of us as can get in sync with them. And I think that's also a little dangerous. And I think there might be a little dangerous. I think we need to be very aware of the fact that we're passing through here unknown territory and getting deeper and deeper into it, and we don't know quite what is there, but there's something there, and if it begins to seem dangerous, we have to be aware of that, and we have to compensate for that if we must. So let's not go dancing down that path saying it's Jesus or it's God's or anything like that. Let's go down that path saying we're here and they are here, and that's something that needs to meet. We don't belong to them in any way. They're not our gods. They're not our demons. They're not our angels. They're somebody else in many ways, just like us.
How about friends?
Are they our friends?
Well, that's something we got to figure out because I don't know the answer to that question. I've had great experiences with them, but I've also had really rough experiences with them. And I know things, you know, there's a constant undertone of stories of, I understand the cattle mutilations now. I understand why that happens. But there have been similar human mutilations, and I'm pretty sure they happened.
Why?
Okay, the visitors have copper in their bones, and I'll get into this in my lectures over the course of this thing, but this is a podcast, so I'll try to talk about it a little bit now.
Yes, they
have copper in their bones, where we have marrow. And there are reasons for this that have to do with the way their devices work, I think. That's my best reasoning for this. They're not, the ones I'm talking about are not natural beings. They're partly biological and partly mechanical. Their bodies require a lot of copper for nutrition. They do not have teeth. They have a much simpler digestive system, and they have to drink something. But that something has to have a lot of copper in it. Now, what animals on Earth have a lot of copper in their blood? Cattle and human beings. Then this explains, I think, the cattle mutilations. Mm. I think that's them getting food. And I think that there have been human mutilations, possibly because the ones that did that didn't realize what we were. Because this is a huge universe, and God knows people might be coming here all the time for the first time and not knowing what we are, I hope. Because if there's some of them who have a taste for us like that, we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. If a chicken saw me, especially with the wings, if a chicken could know me,
you're talking about wings again.
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm scared all over again. I'm terrified. I can't stand the least taste of hot sauce, but thank God we're not going to do anything like that.
Nothing like that at all. No. Now, my question is, what are they? What, in your opinion, the visitors, could they possibly be us?
Could they be us from the future? Well, if they are us from the future, we really got screwed up.
Because how do they find their way out here? Like, what's the point of coming here?
I believe we're quite rare. I believe the planet is quite rare. I believe the planet is incredibly rich with life, more so than probably many. Maybe it's the richest planet they've ever found. And it's filled with us. And they got to make that work somehow, because if that's true, they're not leaving. They're definitely not leaving. This is my sense of it, that they consider this very valuable, and they're very angry about the way we live, that we eat the planet with like caterpillars. Maybe they're here to try to preserve the planet more than preserve us. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, listening to your, the most recent episode of your podcast, and you mentioned grays, and you mentioned communications with tall whites, and Nordics. Yeah. So, when you say they and them, how many theys and thems are there?
I'm generally talking about the grays because that's right. Who I know.
Okay,
I know there are lots of other species talked about, and I'm not saying they're not here. I mean, we've got 21 sextillion planets in this universe. So it would not be improbable, if it's easier than we think to get around in it, that there might be quite a few different forms here, including forms we don't even realize are living. I mean, God knows what could be out there. The ones I have interaction and experience with mostly are the grays. So that's who I talk about when I say them.
Okay. Do the Nordics abduct people?
I don't know. I've had one experience with the Nordics, and that was with a Nordic, a man who was clearly, for various reasons, it was very clear that he was really from another world. Mm-hmm. And he proceeded to tell me that the Greys were extremely dangerous and that if we had a war with them, they would never let us win and they would never let us stop fighting. And every time I hear some of the people from the inside coming, talking about shooting at them, I think to myself, I hope they don't piss them off too much. Because I don't want to end up in a war that we can never win and that we can never stop fighting.
America loves that, though.
Yeah.
It's our favorite kind.
What?
That we love that style of war. We love it when it never ends and we can make a lot of money on it.
Well, yeah, except when you're in front of the guns instead of behind them. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think from my life experience with the Greys, having a fight with them would be fantastically unpleasant.
Do you think that, like, I've always been, because also describing the Greys, do you think that, like, if you had went ham in that experience, like, you could have, like, tore them to pieces? Like, do you think that you literally could have fought them? Like, if you had went...
Physically, they're fragile. Yeah. Yeah. But remember, they're not welded to their bodies like we are. We're welded to our bodies. I'm in here, and I'm not getting out. Bob Monroe learned how to get out of his body, and I took his course and did it a couple times. But I could not go into my bedroom tonight and go into a mind asleep, body awake state and get out of my body. The Greys can come and go as they wish. So the bodies don't mean the same thing to them that they mean to us. If you hurt them, one of their bodies, they get really pissed off. But they're going to grow another one.
But if you ever saw, do you ever see one with what you'd call a weapon?
Not personally, no. And I don't know anyone who has. I've seen things done by them that might as well be done by weapons. Like they're very psychotronic in the sense that Ann and I once had an experience where one of them projected like a fear ray at us. And, you know, we don't do that. We don't have a gun that we can pull out and shoot and pull the trigger and send fear to you. But they did do that. It was scary, frankly. Yeah. It because you could feel this fear came into me. And I had no idea. We were out walking when it happened and said, I think we better go another way. It was about two. When we lived in Texas, we used to walk at like 2 o'clock in the morning because in the summer, you couldn't walk there during the day. It's too hot. And she said, I think we should go another way. And she was right. That's a weapon. Another type of weapon that I know they possess will turn an aggressive person into a compliant person by making them think that like they've been possessed by an angel. In other words, the person might be very aggressive and suddenly they feel something angelic come into their body and they think, oh, this is wrong. I'm making a mistake. I need to be at peace here. And from then on, that person is no longer an aggressor. It's a powerful weapon. And the people who have been struck by this weapon don't think of it as a weapon because that's not how it feels. But it's a very powerful weapon. And it's a very compassionate weapon in a way, too, because it made that person's life better and also caused them to not be a danger to the Greys. Now, that's all fine as long as the Greys aren't a danger to us. They are, then that is one hell of a dangerous weapon. And I don't really know the answer to the question as to whether they're dangerous to us or not.
Is that weapon weed?
Yes.
Yes, man, that would be awesome.
No, that's what you just
No, it's not.
Me.
I don't think it's weed. I don't think it's weed. But I've often wondered about them and drugs. Yeah. And
because have you ever done psychedelics?
I've never done any kind of drugs. I will tell you my one story of weed. This was back in the 70s.
When it was good.
Well, I was at a party, and it was
all
in New York.
The leaves are brown. Keep going. The sky is gray.
Anyway, and you know, in those days, it was not. It was very. People were pretty private about it. So it was in. Some friends were all in a room, and I was wanting to talk to them. And I walked into the room, and there was a lot of. They were smoking weed. It was very smoky, and I was in there for maybe 5 minutes and chatted briefly with a couple of them and then realized the smoke is too intense. I'm getting out of here. I was high for a week. And what happened was after a few minutes after that, Anne said, how did you get high? I said, I don't know what you mean. And then she realized what had happened. She said, we're going home. And so I was like a slow propeller turning around. I was really not in this world. And then the next day was Sunday. Monday, I went to work, and I kept seeing myself passing in the street when I was walking to the office. And then when I was in my office, I heard myself talking to me and stuff. It was really bizarre. So I went home. I stayed home for a couple days. I felt better. I went back to work. Then the next week, we went to another party. She said, stay away from any marijuana. And I'm at the party, I'm effusively complimenting the hostess on the goldfish in her lampstands. And Anne says, we're going home, you're still high. And, you know, if you're high from secondhand smoke inhaled for a few minutes, you don't want to do grass.
I also feel like if you just jump right into DMT, I actually wonder if it will do, but I don't know if it'll do anything. I honestly do. I had a psychedelic experience in which I spoke to a corporeal thing, like a thing, like a thought. Felt like something outside of me. Felt like I was talking to something that was talking back to me independently of me. And I actually wonder if it is connected to something like these experiences, or if it would actually screw up that kind of experience.
I don't know, and I don't want to find out, because, I mean, why in the world would I need psychedelics?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see why. And I think they might screw up my experience.
You're doing the trippiest shit.
I'm trippier than anyone who's tripping, because I get this in the physical world all the time.
I'm jealous.
Okay.
That actually is an interesting thing that I would love to ask you about. When you hear people say they want contact, or they're excited, or they wish that would ever happen to them, how does that make you feel? Because
I'm guilty of this, but I have read all the material, and my wife gets really upset when I ironically try to even say I want to get abducted, because she's like, so you'll leave me? You'll leave this earth?
Well, look, if you get abducted, don't expect to sit down for a while after that.
Oh, man, no.
Hey, you eat all these wings, don't expect to sit down for a while.
Listen,
after that
hey,
either.
No. I'm from Hollywood. I can take it.
Okay. The most recent, I know a person who had a very powerful physical experience about a month ago, in LA, and it was not harsh. It was scary, but she, poor woman, she was terrified. Because there was a gray looking at her in her bedroom. She was wide awake. And she thought to herself, oh, my God, I wish the sun would come up. Whereupon this huge light filled the entire house. She lives up in the Hollywood Hills with light. And like it was the sun. But she said, I knew it couldn't be the sun because it was the middle of the night. And I said, but were you still scared? She said, no, that's the funny thing. I didn't feel scared anymore. But then the next thing she knew, she was grabbed by the wrist and dragged up out through the ceiling and roof of her house and had 2 hours of missing time. But she's not unhappy with it. She felt like, you know, it was a very interesting experience, and she felt in some ways enriched by it. But it's not like it used to be where, you know, you'd get beat up and you know, it would, you know, they'd steal sperm and eggs from people and stuff. And it's not like that. It seems much more of an attempt to kind of come into sync with us in the physical world. And I don't think they really have the same relationship to the physical reality that we do. They have these bodies, but I'm not sure that they experience this like we experience it. I think, and they're trying to figure out what points of correspondence there are between us, so that they can figure out ways of relating to us. So I think the quality of the physical experience has changed a lot over the years. And I also don't think that they're doing violent things to people anymore. I think they're figuring out more about how we think about ourselves, for example.
Sure. So, like, they're realizing they're scaring the shit out of us and they're hurting us.
They're basically realizing that they have a major PR problem here.
Yeah.
And they probably got their research done. Like, they've learned everything they were trying to learn, maybe, and now they're moving on to other
stuff.
But
remember, they don't innovate very quickly. They're not... This room is far more creative than the Greys in their entirety, I believe. Just one room. And, you know, we have art, we have music, we have the Ramones, we have all kinds of stuff. We have Bach, Beethoven, unbelievable array of creativity, all the art, all the writing, all this stuff.
So you don't think they have art, they don't have art or
I have
songs
never
or humor?
Seen anything like that among them. They don't have color vision, which sets them back tremendously in terms of relating to the physical world the way we do, because we see the physical world very differently from the way they do. And maybe they have, I've thought, because they can see in the infrared and probably into the ultraviolet, that they may have art that we literally can't see. Mm-hmm. Possibly. Gesundheit. At the same time, I think it's a single mind. And I'm pretty sure, as a single mind, if they had art and stuff like that, it's probably gotten old a long, long time ago. And that would be another reason they're here. They want to be enriched by this planet, which is probably one of the... If a lot of species have group minds like that, this planet could be one of the richest places in the universe, because there's not a group mind here. I mean, we can easily prove it. We're fighting all the time. And I don't think they ever fight with themselves, because, you know, do you fight with yourself? A little bit, maybe. But we're not going to take a gun and go shoot ourselves unless we want to commit suicide. But we're certainly not going to have an internal war with yourself. So they don't have that. They don't have armies and battles and stuff. And they also don't have art and newness and new discoveries. Everything they do possess that I have seen, including the way they interact with you, is kind of perfect. And where do you go from there? There's only one direction you can go in, back into imperfection to make new discoveries. And here we are. We are definitely not perfect.
Do you think that they would leave the artists at home? You know, it's not like we sent Neil Armstrong to the moon. We didn't send Jimi Hendrix.
If it was as easy for us to get around in the universe as I'm pretty sure it is for them, everyone would be going fast. Jimi Hendrix. I mean, you couldn't stop Elon Musk. The great artists would all go. The musicians, everyone who could go would go. What an adventure!
Katy Perry doesn't count.
Katy Perry shouldn't be allowed.
Live from your grave.
So you mentioned, you know, earlier that we're at, you know, and somewhat of an inflection point in humanity. So what is going on right now? Like, what is happening?
We're discovering, basically, that they're real. And they're discovering that we have self-awareness, self-knowledge, and complex minds, that we are, in a sense, real, too. That's what's basically happening. We're discovering that they really are here, And they are discovering that we are a lot more complex than they realized.
Do they refer to a god?
I think the best way to address that is to turn it around a little bit and say, our gods are ours. They are not our gods. The Greys, the visitors, they are, none of them are our gods. And they're very interested in what scientists call negative entropy. And being scientists, that sounds like something negative because it has the word negative in it. It actually isn't. It is the continuing proliferation of complexity in the universe. In other words, the world getting richer and richer and richer with more and more experience. And I'm pretty sure that's their idea of the sacred, okay. That this is what is sacred. As far as a god is concerned, Anne used to say that they understood God as a mathematical formula. And I often wondered, what in the world does that mean? And I found out after Annie passed away that there is a constant called the fine structure constant. Everything's appearance, the way the world is physically and the way it works, is dependent on that constant. The fascinating thing about it is, nobody, it's not like the other constants, the Planck constant, which is the closest possible thing, distance two things can be together without touching. We understand why that is. We understand the why of all of the constants, but not that one. We don't understand why it happens to be the number 1/137th. We don't know that. And I think you are looking at God there. That somewhere behind this universe is someone with a mind and with taste and with a desire to have it be the way it is. Because if you think about this, before the Big Bang, those constants had to already be there. They had to be there somewhere, and that somewhere was the mind of God. Because they didn't evolve as the universe burst out into reality, because it was following rules from the moment it began. Therefore, the rules were there before it was.
Why does that fraction not want people to be gay?
People be what?
I didn't hear you.
Why does that one fraction so desperate to keep people from being gay?
Did you not recreate it?
I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is.
I think, you know, in ancient Rome, they didn't even have a word for homosexual. They didn't have a word for gay. That came along much later, and it only became really a part of our social contract in the Western world quite recently, within the past 200 years. I think it's something, being the issue of gayness and the exploration of sexuality is something we're doing and we need to do right now. But I think it would be nice if we could put our prejudices behind us and just enjoy ourselves as what we are, because we are very complex. There's many different levels of human experience and human love and human desire. And let's just open our minds to all of them. And if somebody you don't like the looks of comes after you, run like hell.
Or embrace them and make sweet love to them.
Yeah.
So what should humanity, I don't know, at this point, what should we be doing? But as far as, like, should we be welcoming it? Should we just be curious? Like, what is our role supposed to be right now as human beings at this point in history?
Getting deep enough into this so that you don't feel a sense of shock about it. The more we do that, the more comfortable we become with it. The you know, we have the skeptics screaming that it's a bunch of tinfoil hat people and people in the government perhaps playing us a little bit in various different ways. Let's just get past that and let's try to just look at this for what it is. Read the books, talk to the people, talk to each other, engage with the experiencers. And in that way, we are going to get past the sense of shock. We don't need many. We need maybe a couple of million people who won't be shocked by this when the Greys or whoever shows up. Then we'll be fine. Most of the world knows nothing about this at all, and they are going to be shocked. But if that core of people remains stable, that stability will spread through the whole species. So what you need to do is that. Engage with the experience at every level, because you're the guys that count right now in this.
I mean, that's actually very inspiring, and I think that's correct. It's almost like, instead of waiting for some form of government disclosure,
yeah,
it's like yourself. It's like you need to literally let it in yourself.
We're what disclosure is about. I know, at least from the Gray standpoint, they're not coming until we're ready. They don't really care about the official world. That's why they have never intervened in the secrecy, because they want us to find our own way to be ready. They want us to do it. And we have to do it on our own. And that means doing what I just said. We just have to do this. And they're very sensitive. They will know when there's enough of a cadre of people who are not going to be overwhelmed by this when they show up. And that's when they will be comfortable in coming. I don't think it has a whole lot to do with disclosure. I think that disclosure could advance it in the sense that then we would know at least that some people in the government thought this was real. But then the negative side of that is that the media is going to go running to them and saying, and hanging on every word, which is already happening to some extent. And the truth is, the people on the inside don't know as much about this as we do, the people on the outside. The experiencer community is much more informed about this than the insiders, as far as I can tell. They have very surfacey understanding of it, the ones that have spoken out, very surfacey understanding of it. They're not nearly, I think Chris Bledsoe knows a whole lot more about this than Lou Elizondo does, for example. And not that Lou is, there's anything wrong with what Lou knows, but people need to go to Chris or come to me or people like us before they go to the government insiders if they're going to get really informed.
That makes a lot of sense, because I also think there's a lot of religiosity that keeps them from being genuinely curious. They're actually very scared of it.
Of course they're going to be scared. Everyone's scared. The Grays, they're going to be really scared. And in the insiders, yeah, I don't know much about this, but I've heard that there's a strong level of belief among many of these people that this is basically a demonic presence.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about the way the Grays are, they react. If you shoot at them, they're going to get really scary. They're not necessarily going to shoot back, but you're going to definitely be really scared, or you're going to be turned into a supplicant, like I described that other weapon earlier, the positive weapon that makes you into a compliant, you know, evaporate your aggressiveness.
Speaking of being a supplicant, it's time for me to introduce our very special segment here for Last Podcast on the Left, live from Contact in the Desert. It's called Spicy Times.
Okay, I will respect this, but I have to say that was really an awkward segue.
Yes.
What are we
doing?
That's
my job, Whitley.
No, I was.
You said before you saw the email.
No, I saw the email. It was very vague, and now I see a lot of hot sauce.
This is a big thing from Wingstop. This is a big get for us. We gave money to Wingstop for this.
Yeah, and if Henry doesn't eat every 40
minutes,
money. He gets
I'll in a I'll give
sweat.
You money back.
Do you want money? Do you want to try one of these? Well, you can just have one. Let me ask you some questions while you're eating wings.
And I think you should too, Henry.
I am going to do it.
I want to see.
Oh, no,
don't touch that one. Don't touch that one.
Not this one.
Don't touch that one.
Not that one.
Not the bomb.
Not that one. Yeah, not that one.
This is starting to
crystal.
This is delicious. This is honestly delicious. It's called a lemon pepper. It's got a banana thing. It's a banana layer. It's like a Jamaican jerk kind of deliciousness. Honestly, this is very good. I use this all the time.
And I want you to cover the wings, Henry.
It has
and
the
I want
prayer
you to eat
for
it
the
too.
Dead I'm going on to. The side of it.
Yes.
What
yes,
am I
yes.
seeing here? This why is, would this Why would this hot sauce contain a prayer for the dead?
It's because it's preparing you. Now, yeah, sir, yeah. We're going to do this. We're going to ask you questions. and we're going to get to the bottom, some really important things, because we're going to ask some, we're going to eat some spicy spiced wings, and we're going to ask some spicy questions.
Yes, Henry has prepared 5 questions. He's going to eat the wings and try to ask the questions.
Now, I'm really doing this.
These are easy. These are easy. These are easy. Here we go. Here we go. So the first question is, my good sir.
I had lunch.
Put it on first and eat it before you. There you go.
Who was your first crush? Celebrity crush.
My first crush.
I can't kill you. You got to talk all day.
Was it that chick in Rome?
It was a little girl named Christina.
Yeah.
And we went to a costume ball together dressed as a prince and princess.
Oh.
I was the prince.
I was about to say, I don't know if you're
she grew up to be gay, and now she's a prince, too.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
This is pretty good.
And just so,
this drink is not bad.
Also, full disclosure, Henry's phone was already covered in sauce before this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wait, that's great. All right, now.
All right, second
They're lying. He's not eating any sauce.
I know. I poured it.
And I want you to eat before you ask.
I have to honestly say, this sauce is very mild.
It's very delicious.
It is very delicious.
This is one step above.
All right.
This is Yellowbird's habanero hot sauce. They're not giving us any money. And this is not a sponsorship.
They're actually very good, though.
And it's not hot ones. It's spicy times. So for this one, my good sir, you can try this. This habanero, I won't give you the ghost pepper. This habanero.
Okay.
It's quite good. It's very tasty, actually. Here, I'll squirt mine first. Do you want me to give you a squirt?
I'll squirt my own, thank you.
Squirt mine now. Squirt his.
Here you go. Squirt.
Here we go. I'm going to get one of these in here, drench that
more,
up.
More.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Cool. Yeah.
I've had nothing but coffee and Pepsi AC today so far.
Well, I have Pepsi AC.
I already had lunch,
so I'm just sort of nibbling here.
Mm.
Okay. Let's get some serious sauce on here.
All right.
Okay, everyone in the audience who can see that, you see this is here.
It's sufficient. It's sufficient.
Oh, great. It's not that bad.
Yes, because you were buddies with... this question is particular for you because you were buddies with Eric Clapton?
No, I wasn't buddies with Eric Clapton. I hung out in Eric Clapton's flat in London.
Okay.
And
Don't sit near the window.
I knew him, that's all. But there were a lot of people hanging out in that flat.
Yeah, but...
No, and we weren't good buddies, but he certainly knew me and I knew him. I doubt he remembers me now, as that back in the 60s.
Okay.
But, yeah.
But the question still remains. The song After Midnight, do you listen to the song before, after, or at midnight so that the song ends after midnight?
I've never heard of the song.
After midnight, come on, hang down. After midnight, we're going to let it scream and shout.
Okay, I have heard of the song. I would recommend listening to it during the day, just to be contrary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Follow-up question, as far as musicians go, I read that you used to have regular dinners with Lou Reed, where you said you had fascinating paranoid.
Yeah, Lou Reed and I went down many conspiratorial paths together.
Yes. What was the strangest conversation?
We talked a lot about something that has become much more real. We talked a lot about Mars.
Yeah.
And now there's a guy here, Peter Robbins. Do not miss his stuff. Look him up. He's not well known, but I had him on Dream. I'll tell you, a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, I was in England, and I was invited to a conference, and he was there. I hadn't seen him in years. He's a sweet guy. He was a dear friend of Bud Hopkins. And he proceeds to give this unbelievable presentation about picture after picture of things on the moon and Mars that NASA has airbrushed out. They have hidden something in plain sight on the moon and on Mars. They're hiding something in our solar system from us. Never a straight fucking answer.
Yeah.
And Peter laid it all out. So I had him on Dreamland. And he laid it out again on Dreamland. And he's here laying it out again. So don't miss this. Lou and I talked a lot about Mars and that the idea that there may have been a civilization in the distant past and so on and so forth. But we were speculating. It's real. There's something going on that we are not supposed to know about because the insiders who are better than us get to know and we get shafted. No, it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I guess my question is that they are powerful and ancient and past us. I guess one question is, why do they have to try so hard to be mysterious? Like, how do they just not, like, I guess that's what it's like. Is it just because we are ended up being more complex than they thought we were?
Yeah. I do not think that they don't innovate and they don't make decisions quickly. They just don't.
Is your blood sugar dropping?
I'm so hungry.
Just do the bit.
Where's the other? This is crystals.
This is going to be hotter. This is the ghost pepper.
Okay.
It's going to be hotter.
Why am I not feeling these?
I don't know.
It's because I think, honestly, you might be in shock.
Remember, you have a panel at 3. Mr. Streamer, please go see George's.
Okay, ghost pepper hot sauce. Whitley's, let's see what it's like.
Ask the question.
Good. All right, one last question. I quit cigarette smoking, right? I still love the smell of cigarettes. When you're walking through the day, because if you talked about the smells of the grace, smelling like burning cardboard. Does that do that for you when you're in Los Angeles?
I do not like the smells of the Grays. They have numerous smells that I have not discussed in any detail for a reason. I will discuss the ammonia smell in my workshop.
Why not discuss them? Just because you think people won't take them?
These guys want this. I told Bud Hopkins this story. And he said, "That is so disgusting, Whitley. That can't be real. That has to be your imagination."
This is the crowd for that. Trust
me. Yeah.
And then, what it was they showed me that material was coming out of their skin, out of their pores, and they were brushing it off like it turned into like a dry kind of stuff, and they would brush it off of their arms, and it smelled like ammonia. It smelled like urine, actually, sort of, but. Different, not quite like that, but close. And I said to Bud, "You know, this is how they relieve themselves. This is how they evacuate." And he said, "Whitley, that is so disgusting. Don't tell anyone that story. It'll ruin your career." And I said to myself, "What career? My career is long since gone." And these are really good.
They're really good. This is what I'm saying. Yellowbird's good.
It's good stuff.
Yellowbird is, they're all good, but this one has got a nice bite to it.
Yeah,
for sure.
I like these. And this is truly, Dirty Dicks is my favorite.
Yeah, we know.
You might, you don't need to go down that path.
I'm from
revealing
Hollywood.
Too much about yourself.
That is so, honestly, though, but I find those are the details that people find extremely interesting.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, one of the reasons I wrote The Fourth Mind was that this was in my mind for years. I mean, I knew I'd seen this. I saw it with my own eyes. Then this document appears on Reddit. And the first paragraph is a detailed description of that precise thing that I had never told anyone about. And therefore, the person who wrote the document knew the truth. It was a real document. It had to be, because no one's going to dream that up. It's too strange.
It's very specific.
And it's so specific. So the Reddit document is damned real in large part. I can't say it's totally real, but that part of it certainly is. And I think most of the material about their biology and anatomy in that document is probably real. I think the document is a true thing. I do not know, and pardon me if I'm hiccuping, but I'm actually enjoying it at the same time. I do not know who wrote the document? I have no idea. I don't. I'm.
That 4chan whistleblower thing that came out, right? I believe that got spread to Reddit, right? Wasn't it a long document of a guy?
A long involved document about their biology. And a lot of that document I can confirm from my own experience, including things that aren't anywhere except in my own experience and in the document. So that makes the document for me a very powerful document.
Unless the CIA is dumping it on Reddit to discredit. They're like that. Sometimes I.
Yeah, but how can they? It's not possible to use that as to discredit because it's too specific and too strange.
And I do have a question about that. You know, I know we're nearing the end here, but I think it's fascinating. Like it does seem like people hold back a lot when it comes to their experiences with Greys. Like why? But it's somewhat paradoxical to me because it seems like people do very much want to be believed and they want to share the experience talk. But there are certain
they want to be believed,
back.
And so they tailor their actual experience into making it somewhat more believable.
Sure.
And they don't say certain things. But I'm not like that anymore. I was when Bud scared me when he said that, and I thought I mustn't say this. I'm long past that at this point. I'll tell you anything I can. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. There are things in my experience, not that I won't tell you, but that I don't know how to put into words.
Right.
And it's very frustrating because they're major things. Like the way they communicate with me physically, I can't put it into words. I can't, but it's real. Like, I just don't know how to say it.
Which is, and for you, you're a writer.
I'm supposed to know how to say these things, right?
Well, but that's sort of my point is that, that there are so many of these people out there who have these experiences that, don't have the advantage that you have of being
A lot of people can't articulate it.
Yeah.
But I can. And, there are also a surprising number of people in the close encounter community who are very articulate. Debbie Jordan is a perfect example. She's very articulate and she can really explain her experiences very clearly. And you read certain books. Chris Bledsoe is very good about explaining his experiences. There's a lot of people. J. Christopher King can do a very good job of explaining this. So there are plenty of people who are articulate, but there are a vast number of people who've had incredible experiences, and they come up to me all the time at conferences like this, and I'm hearing this phenomenal experience. And I always say, write it down and send me an email, because those emails all go into a file, and that file grows the archive at Rice University. Mm-hmm. And so...
Okay, actually, do you want to give the audience your email? In terms of what they can reach you at?
Okay, my email address is very simple. Whitley@streber.com.
Nice.
And I will read it. And if it's a nasty email, then my assistant will send you a reply. If it's not, I will.
Before we go, you have to eat this, Henry.
I have to do the
debomb? You bought this. You're doing this.
I'll just do it.
We're here.
You're not doing this.
You could have Whitley. Another habanero, Mr. Streber.
Okay. And they do not want me to have a stroke on their show.
No.
Later, they don't care.
You're not allowed to die.
I was really worried that, something would happen to you. But Henry deserves this.
They gave me only mild, tasty hot sauces. Don't be fooled.
I'm being
nice. And what's the question you want to ask? Remember to put it in your head, Henry, before you eat this, because it's going to mess your life up. No, eat it first and then ask it. Here we go. Let's see. This is the whole thing. Oh, yeah. A little more.
He's turning red. Look at that.
That's horrible.
What is that? Was that Henry?
That's the bomb. Oh, God.
What are you trying? What is it? What is it?
That's real serious, Whitley.
I don't believe you. I want to taste that.
I don't know, Whitley. That's real serious, huh?
Okay.
That's real serious.
What did you want to
Hello?
Ask him?
That's bad.
We're out of time. We're over. We're
That's
5
bad.
Minutes
we
over.
We have to go. Who's your favorite person here?
Oh. Well, I have some friends here who are all my favorite people.
Oh, that's nice.
And I love, I can't have a favorite person in my life. I'm in love with people.
Oh. Oh, man. That's really beautiful. Nice. That's too nice.
It's the truth. It's the truth. You do something like this for years, and you see all these people trying to understand and trying to find their way with it, and you're doing the same, and you fall in love, and that's why I keep doing it.
That's amazing.
Willie, don't touch your eyes. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Willie Streamer. Willie Streamer, everybody!
Yes, thanks.
Wonderful.
Live from your grave.
Wow. What an interview.
His demeanor was so surprising to me, just how, like you said earlier, like that he was warm.
Yes.
And he was friendly. And that I wanted to go so much further into, like, he hung out at Max's Kansas City.
Well, that
he's
was like
the coolest. He, like, not only is all this shit, you know, like true, like him being an alien abductee and all that, but dude hung out at Max's Kansas City. He saw the New York Dolls. Yeah. He knew Lou Reed.
Yeah, dude. Like, that's like one of those things where as we're talking about aliens, Marcus has like all of his music questions lined up. And he's talking deep about UFOs and his experience with the Galactic Federation. But it's like, but he gave Marcus nothing on Lou Reed. And it's just like, and that's all he really wanted to talk about.
That's what I was so excited about. Just like, because I know Lou Reed was all, he was also into the occult. I think it was the White Flame.
Yeah,
White
Night. White heat.
What was it? White light. White night was Jonestown.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Alice Monroe. I mean, maybe it's Alice somebody. But yeah, I thought that there would be something, but no, he gave me nothing.
No.
And then I asked him before. It's like, so you went to Max's Kansas City? He's like, you saw like the New York Dolls. You see television? He's like, yeah, saw him. I'm like, give me what was it like? Did you go to Mercer Hotel?
It's a separate interview.
Yeah, it's a separate interview.
We're going to have to get him on No Dog.
You just hand him a spoon and a lighter and see how he acts.
Yeah, come on. He's just like, oh, hell yeah, some good old-fashioned Western Brown.
I just feel honored that he actually talked to us.
I really do, too. Like, I think it shows bravery on his part.
It does.
Yeah. And he was... I would say just open to dealing with shitheads like us, because he's been having to deal with shitheads like us since the fucking first episode of South Park.
Yeah.
You know, he really has. Like, that's the alien, the anal probe jokes. I mean, they all come from him.
They do.
It comes from him. All that, and he's been dealing with that for many, many years.
When that's your legacy, sometimes it might be hard walking around as Whitley Strieber.
It might be, but the man's got grace, the man's got class, and I'd love to speak with him again.
Absolutely.
No, I love him.
Yeah.
Let's go find him.
Yes. Listen, but go and watch our comedy show.
Yes, on LPN TV, on YouTube, and then go to patreon.com/lastpodcast and left to check out a bunch of other interviews we did at Contact. We are slapping it all on there, and then at LP on the left for all of your social needs, and please... subscribe on YouTube. It's so fucking easy and it's fucking free.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to be in St. Paul, Minnesota soon. So come
very
see us
soon.
There.
Hail Satan.
Yes.
Enjoy yourself.
No, and Hail Gino. Also going to be in Milwaukee.
Oh, yes.
Milwaukee. I've heard about that. I've heard about Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
The good land.
Hail Streamer.
Hail Streamer.